Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Steve Fezzik, the only two-time winner of the Super Contest, will join us. Talk a little Final Four, get his thoughts on the baseball season so far, start to transition to the NBA, NFL draft. Just, we're in April now, so we're in the same month of the NFL draft. I have to say, there is just not a lot of buzz for the NFL draft, and maybe it's like this every year, and I'm just misremembering it, but just, not a lot of quarterbacks, not a lot of skill guys, a lot of defensive players. We know Mendoza's going to go one, so there just hasn't been a lot of juice, a lot of buzz. I'm sure that'll change in the next couple weeks, but as of now, it's just been kind of a lackluster, especially in terms of the betting, with what's offered and just interest in it. I feel like a lackluster NFL draft cycle, at least so far. But we'll start here before we get to Fez with the Final Four tomorrow. The ball tips 6:09 Eastern. I can't wait. It almost starts to feel like a little bit like the Super Bowl or NFL playoff games where you have all week to dissect these games, think about them, talk about them, and the game finally comes and you can see if you're right or you're wrong. And just on the surface, two tremendous games. Illinois laying 2, Michigan laying 1.5. So you got one game lined to 2, one game lined to 1.5. And that speaks to just how close these games are, how tightly contested you would think they would be, at least on paper. I'll start UConn, Illinois. I talked about it a little the other day, and I'll talk about it a little bit with Fez. I like UConn. I did go back and rewatch a good chunk of the first game. It was on Black Friday. UConn won the game by double digits. I think you can, for the most part, dismiss it, which a lot of people have said, 74-61 on November 28th. Illinois did not shoot the 3 well, 6 of 29. UConn, that was probably the difference in the game where one team shot 29 threes, UConn shot 28 and made 10. So they had 12 extra points on threes, and they won the game by 13. Illinois did shoot extremely well from the foul line, 17 of 18. Turnovers, 10 to 9. Offensive rebounds, 14 to 12 in favor of UConn. I mean, it was a pretty even game. The one thing I did notice from watching the replay, Illinois did not play well defensively, and they seemed to get confused and just lost defensively with the screens that UConn does. And UConn, and not an X's and O's guys, but UConn is known for just endless screening and motion and action and just constantly making you think and constantly, putting you in motion and giving the defense a chance to screw up, and boom, you end up with an easy bucket. So you could make the case that that's a positive for UConn, that their motion is difficult for Illinois to handle. But you could also make the case that Illinois, now that they've seen it once, the confusion really threw them off the first time, but now that they've seen it and they'll be more prepared for it the second time around, I think there's some truth to either. Again, I like UConn, and I think a lot of this game, and you could say this about the other game too, we're going to come up with, we can talk about these games and dissect them from top to bottom, look at every game, look at every statistic. Are the threes going to drop or are they not? And that has been such a thing with UConn, where they did not shoot the three well all tournament. Poorly against Furman, poorly against UCLA, 6 of 24s, 8 of 25, 8 of 24. I mean, just down the line, they shot terribly for three. And then start 1 of 19 for Duke. Now, will that flurry towards the end where they hit three or four of them, including the big one that lives forever with Mullins, will that get him going? And will that flurry of threes towards the end, I'll say carry over, because that doesn't typically happen. I mean, that one game was Sunday. The next game is going to be Saturday. It's not probably going to continue. But, you get the idea. Will the hot shooting towards the end suddenly come back to life? Because they have good shooters. Mullins on paper is a good shooter, and he hasn't shot well recently. Ball shot 42% on 243 point attempts last year, shooting 31% from three this year, and he's been bad recently. So I don't know if it's a slump, a loss of confidence, if it's a mechanical issue, if it's probably a combination of the three. But can Solo Ball come back to life and just have a throwback performance here where he hits four or five threes, or Carabin hits four or five threes and UConn hits the three? That will be, to me, the key to the game. Does the three ball fall for UConn? And I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I would think at some point here, they're going to start to shoot the three better. I know they haven't been a great offensive team and a great three-point shooting team in this tournament, but maybe they've got a little run here of good luck in terms of the three-point shooting coming to them. That would not surprise me. They shot it better against Michigan State. They started out really hot. Then they went cold again. Ball is a key. Mullins, you figure he has some confidence after that shot. If anything's going to relax you and put you in a groove and get you going, it would be that. So I like UConn. I'll take them plus the 2. I'm surprised this number hasn't moved. I know it's still not day of the game. You could get to the day of the game, and that's where a lot of people put their bets in. Oh, UConn's playing Illinois. Let me take UConn. So we'll see here. I think, to me, it's just of all the bets you can make, you're going to take out your wallet, take out your money, and say, I'm going to bet against Hurley and UConn. in the tournament. And I really do think there is an element now of the Chiefs, Mahomes, you're afraid to bet against it, which is not the best reason. And either way, if you bet this game, you lose, you're going to feel like an idiot, because it does feel like this is not vintage UConn from 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And last week was a miracle. You know, they weren't great against Furman. UCLA was shorthanded. They weren't that impressive against Michigan State. Oh, that was a good win, but they blew a 20-point lead in that game, 19-point lead, before rallying at the end and winning. I'm going with UConn. Do I feel 100% confident? Like, I'd be shocked if Illinois won the game. Absolutely not. But I think you have to take Hurley here, take the points, and I will advance UConn here in the final. To meet Arizona, I've been talking about this for a little while. Saw them play in November. Was down to the wire. There was no Reed, no Mullins, and UConn still had a late lead. But I am going to go with Arizona, and you could say the same thing about Michigan that I was talking about with UConn, where the three is really the key stat for them. It's such a big stat, because in their three losses, just going through them again, they were 8 of 25 for three against Wisconsin. 32%, that's not terrible, but Wisconsin hit 15 three-pointers, so they lost 21 points on the three-point line and lost the game by three back on January 10th. That was the first day of the NFL playoffs, you know, Rams-Panthers and Bears-Packers that Saturday afternoon before those games. So they shot 32% against Wisconsin. They lost. Big Ten title game, March 15th. They shot 7 of 24, 29%. They lost. And then against Duke, they shot against Duke 6 of 19. I'm sorry, 6 of 25. Duke was 6 of 19. Michigan was 6 of 25, 24%. So 24%, 32%. I mean, you get the idea here. They have not shot the three well at all in their losses. 32% and the 29% against Michigan. You round it, you combine that with all the three-point attempts, it's like 28, 29% in the three losses. If they're not going to shoot 30%, or if they're going to shoot 30% or lower, they're probably going to lose, because Arizona's just really damn good. Meanwhile, if they shoot 40% or higher with everything else they bring to the table, they're going to be pretty hard to beat. So don't want to oversimplify it, but that's how I look at it. The reason I'm picking Arizona, I just think Arizona, I talked about this the other day, talked about a little bit on the open and with Iron Eagle, and go back and listen to that if you haven't. Iron was really good, as you'd expect. Arizona is just bigger, bulkier, stronger. They are like a football team. They are so strong. And I don't think, like, Wisconsin spread Michigan out, made 15 threes. Arizona doesn't have that ability, but I think Arizona is just thicker and stronger and beefier than Michigan, and they can maybe get to the line, you know, get some and ones and maybe get some of these Michigan bigs in trouble and just go through them almost like a football team, lining it up and running it and just winning with power. I think Arizona can overpower Michigan with their brute strength, and I will take the point and a half. Like, if I was making the line, I just think it's a pick 'em game. I think it's a total toss-up game. I think if they played 10 times, probably 5-5. You can certainly make your cases for Michigan. These teams are not separated by much. I completely understand that. But, hey, you got to pick somebody. I'll go with Arizona. I think their muscle gets them home. And plus the fact that Michigan, when they're vulnerable when they're not making their threes, those have been, you know, the common theme in their three losses. Playing in Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium, where the Colts play, it's a big football stadium. Typically those places are tough to shoot. So if Michigan, if you're going to tell me, hey, it's going to be a tough night to shoot with the shooting, you know, backdrop and all of that, that's the key to beating Michigan. Get them to have a bad shooting night, and then Arizona, the rest of their team is just so good that it's hard to beat Arizona if you're not shooting the three well. So I like Arizona. I like UConn. They played in November. Why not play again Monday night for the whole thing? Do I feel great in either one? I really don't. If you tell me right now it's Michigan, Illinois, I wouldn't blink. Again, one line is 1.5. The other line is 2. These are toss-up games for the most part for a reason. But I will go UConn. I will go with Arizona. And it's remarkable to think that either Arizona or Michigan will not play for the title. These teams are that good. Really, really good. An incredible matchup. You're getting to the point with Arizona-Michigan where it's so hyped. Everyone's so excited for it. It's almost going to be hard to live up to the hype. That's how highly anticipated this game is. But let's see what Steve Fezzik thinks. We'll get his thoughts on this. Some NBA, maybe some baseball, tennis versus Todd Wishnev, which I'm excited to get his thoughts and his version of that. We had Todd on a month or so ago, and Todd had his piece, and we want to hear what Steve has to say about that. That is coming up next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should a bet more podcast. He has won millions in contests. He is a professional sports bettor, and he will let you know which contest he won. He joins us now. It is the great Steve Fezzik. Steve, this is long overdue. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Bet more, win more. Absolutely. Fortunate enough to win the Westgate Super Contest second half contest last year after a horrific first half of the contest. That's the beauty of these mini contests. Second half paid $50,000, 34, 10, and 1.
Pretty good. Pretty good, to quote Larry David. We got a lot to get to. You got a lot on your mind, as usual. But let's start. By the time people listen to this, we will be one day away from the Final Four. We'll go chronological order here. UConn getting 2 against Illinois. I know you seem to think Illinois is going to have a home court advantage here. For me, man, UConn is becoming like the Chiefs, where it's just terrifying to bet against them in these tournaments. When they get in, they go deep, they win. But what's your take on this game?
You know what surprises me is that I would think they would get the raw end of the whistle. If I'm a ref, I'm tired of the whole Hurley act and being a bully and the like. And if there's any kind of questionable call, I'm calling it against Connecticut just on principle the way he is. But I do think in the heart of Big Ten country, you're going to see the Illinois and Michigan have the advantage. Having said that, Illinois -2, this game could easily be decided by a point or two. I'm going to play under in the Annapolis, as they say, in the football stadium. You can't go wrong looking towards unders with the compromised 3-point shooting. So I'll have a bet on something on the unders. Hey, real important. It's that time of year. Square ball books put up team totals. It's not unusual if you have enough outs. You're going to get plus money on the teams to go under. That's a better way to go betting the team totals under plus 105 at marker numbers than trying to win laying minus 110 on a market number for the game.
If you had to pick a winner, who would you pick?
Oh, I think Illinois is going to win the game. Okay. I do.
I've gotten this question a lot. I mean, I think I know what you're probably going to say, but you know, a lot of people, like I have UConn 15-1. A lot of people seem to have them in that range. They ask, should I hedge? What should I hedge? Let's just say you want to monetize it. Is it too early to hedge considering they're going to be big dogs in the finals? What would be your advice to somebody who has a UConn 15-1 in terms of hedging?
Well, you've got to assess who you like in the game. And if you were going to bet UConn anyways, you've already got a bet on UConn, so don't bet it. And if you like Illinois, then there's no reason not to go ahead and take, if you your monetized value of your current ticket, which if you said, I don't know. So if UConn has a 1/6 chance of winning and it's going to pay $15,000, then it's like worth, you've got a ticket worth like $3,000. So you could easily bet up to $3,000 on the other guys and you're basically indifferent. Obviously, you have to play the money line so you don't get middled. But I think, you know, this whole hedging thing, real important. You hear all the time, good advice, don't bet futures. You can play the money line parlay, right? The money line parlay will typically pay more, so that's the better route to go. The problem with that is even though it's superior, it's still flawed horribly because no pro bettor, no serious bettor ever bets more than 5% of their bankroll. So think about this. If you got a ticket that pays 100-1, once it hits the semifinals of any tournament, you know, you're going to have to hedge it anyways because you've way overbet your bankroll on it more than likely, such that, I mean, and if you're doing the money line parlay, you're not going to risk, you know, 20 units on a play. You're going to risk 3 units. That's your max bet. So the money line parlay rollover is flawed as well.
The second game here, Michigan, Arizona, also in Big Ten country. We're playing these games in Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium, big cavernous environment in terms of the shooting. Boy, if you played this game 10 times, you'd probably go 5 each. I mean, if they could tie, they could probably tie. To me, these teams are about as dead even as it gets. But home court advantage, do you buy that it's a distraction with Lloyd? Maybe has one eye on North Carolina here. What's your take on this game?
How can the team not be distracted, right? So it's not just the coach being distracted, but it's the team trying to figure out what's going on. You're traveling two time zones, and you're in the heart of Big Ten country where the crowd's going to turn on you. And have we forgotten the failures of Arizona? It's like Charlie Brown on the football, you know, trying to kick it with Lucy. How many times do you have to see Arizona fail? And now, hey, you know, they covered against Utah State. They're up 4 midway through the second half, up 4, and they win by 12. People are forgetting they could have lost to Utah State. They're going to lose this game. I would lean Michigan certainly would look to play under. I get it. Michigan might struggle to shoot their threes. Arizona won't even shoot threes. I'll look under.
Sounds like you're leaning towards a Michigan over Illinois in the title game on Monday.
I am. And, you know, Michigan's been the best team all year long. And then they did have a slump. They did have an injury. People forget, you know, they were laying three against Duke in that game that they lost just a month ago. I think Michigan will cut down the nets.
Betting day to day, like, where are we going to be a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Is it going to be all exchanges? Are they putting these books out of business? The -110 line, the dime line in baseball is really hard to find. What are you just sharing your general thoughts here, just like everyday betting?
Well, the times they are changing, as Dylan would say. They should put all these traditional sports books out of business on the day of the game. Look no further than like the major events, like the Final Four. I mean, the South Point. Kudos to them. They're offering -105 pricing. But -105 pricing's woefully inadequate with, you know, the Profit X's and these other betting exchanges and sweepstakes and the like. You're staring at, if you put up an offer, -101. And if you think you're going to win -110, if you think you can win beating a sports book at a market number, if everybody's dealing Michigan -1.5, and you're going to lay -110, if you could beat that, well, I got good news for you. You're going to become a millionaire quickly because you're going to be able to play these games at post or the day of the game at -102, -103. And so your ROI is going to go up 3% per play because now you only have to hit like 50.6% to break even. So if you can hit 52.6%, your ROI is 4% for everything you wager. Ramp it up and invite me to the island you're going to be living on because you're clearly going to do well. And, you know, people get mad at me. I'll say it. Every single person, when they're interviewed, they're struggling in contests. You put them in a contest, and they hit right around 50%. How's your season go? Oh, season's going great. I'm hitting like 58%. But yet every single time that it's not in pocket, self-documented, and they have people actually go into a contest, guess what? All of a sudden, they're not in the top 20. They're not winning it. They're not in the top 100. They're right around 500. So it's beyond disappointing, the self-reporting everyone has on their actual results.
Some would say Killian is lying to you. Have you heard that expression, that quote before?
For those who missed it, The Running Man, one of the top 10 movies of all time. Yes, Killian is lying to you, as big bad Ben Richards, Arnold Schwarzenegger, sets down the truth.
There is some truth, I think, sometimes to, like, hey, you get stuff live, you get stuff in terms of props that's not widely available. You have enough books that you can win where it's maybe not, you know, publicly available or widely available, but your point is well taken.
Oh, this is very important. Will brings up a great point. If you're betting props, you could be a lot of the people that lose straight betting, like, they look at their overall results and they're up big, and so they just assume they can beat sides and totals, but they're right, killing it because they're winning 8 out of 10 strikeout props for the week and things like that. And live betting, look at no further than the great Todd Wishnev. He's up 180 units betting live, one unit at a time. Guess what? That's 180 units more than almost everybody else that's out in the industry right now.
And our buddy Hitman, I think he had a show a couple years ago. It was not this past football season, but the one before, where he's like 1-14 on his best bets. But you and I have access to the Hitman plays. The Hitman, and people, you know, make fun of him on Twitter. He's no good. You and I know the Hitman is pretty damn good.
You know, it's a great example. Let's be fair. I think he was 4-14. I think he beat this Judah guy who everyone's been telling me that he's a genius since he's 17. All the time I've heard, I don't know what they mean. The weekends at the NFL didn't turn out like he planned. The things that pass for knowledge, I don't understand. So, dudes, and I'm sure he crushes it with his alternative bets on SGPs and finds great value and probably wins millions of dollars. But you know what? If you think you can just find some NFL game that's being dealt at -3, like -101 in each direction on an exchange, and magically say, hey, there's a lot of volatility, I can bet an alt side at -6 or at +2 and find value, you are beyond delusional. The distribution of the results are not going to be that different game by game. You're not going to win betting into a straddle for an alternative sides of like, you know, 40-cent differentials when if you could beat that, again, you're going to be living on an island printing, you know, drinking Mai Tais, betting into minus 102 lines at the market number.
A week into baseball. Any takeaways, ABS? How's your betting going? What's been your baseball takeaways? How much baseball do you watch, by the way?
So very little, but I bet lots of it. The way too early conclusion. I'm an idiot. I got suckered in like Lucy and Charlie Brown. The White Sox and Colorado. Everybody bet on these teams all summer long. They're going to be so much better. And the Pirates offense. Oh, four new starters. And you know what? They're still the Pirates offense. They're still the White Sox, and they're still Colorado. And I panicked. I bet big on the White Sox, and I bet kind of big on Colorado over. And I said, the heck with this, Will. Get me the hell out of my bets. I played White Sox under 67.5, and then I went and played Colorado under 55.5. And I have a one-game middle still, despite them starting, you know, 1-3. And I'm like, going to be long year for both these teams. The way too early conclusion.
Yeah, and look, the one-game middle sounds like not much over 162 games, but as I know, as the Bear know, a bunch of people, Yankees last year were 93.5. Cole gets hurt. What's this? Play under. Goes to 88.5. What's this? Play over. And it looked like the middle was right there, and I think they won their last 9 or 10 games to get to burn the middle, to go over by a half a game. So those middles can come into play, which if you have that middle set up, you can start to play off it and lock in a profit.
But, well, look at the Cleveland Guardians last year. That the entire year, they were basically right on pace to win just below the 82 wins that all the sharps bet. And then the most biggest butt kicking you will ever see, and their run differential was poor. They got out scored by their opponents. And they won like they went like 11-1 to end the year. Not only did they blow through their 82, but they beat their alternative total of 87.5, which had to have been one of the worst bad beats of all time if you played the guards under the 87.5.
Yeah, and remember, I think it was the last day of the season they played some crazy game. And most people weren't watching it because football was going on. It was on a Sunday in the NFL, but you know, blew lead after lead after lead, and eventually lost in extra innings. I think on a walk off homer. What's your day like? Is you start to slow down? I know you grind nonstop football and then college basketball. We're past the point of seeing college basketball is not over, but it's almost over. You get into NBA playoffs. Do you take the foot off the gas now, or are you still full go here until the NBA playoffs end?
Oh, I'm easing off the gas. So, you know, my basic strategy, this is really complicated. I don't know if I can go through this, but the NIT and the Crown games, I play over in the first round. It's just been profitable. Didn't work this year in the NIT. We'll see if it works with the Crown games. I know they were taping a little early, so we'll see how those play out in the first round. But the I got to tell you, like, basic strategy, women's tournament, I get to the Sweet 16 and beyond, I play games under. And I play basketball games played in football stadiums, I look to play under. I know that sounds too robotic and the like, and I could improve. Why not, you know, use your models and you can improve upon this because my models aren't good enough. If you got something that basic strategy works, spring football, play under week one, went 3-1 with the UFL. Having guidelines, guardrails for your betting certainly helps. And I'll give one for everyone with upcoming football season. Play every college football game under week one in August. Play them like when the totals first come out, you'll probably hit 56%. With a high volume of games.
When does your football prep start? NFL, college? It's harder now with college than ever because, I mean, every team is a new team. It's almost like a full-time job just to do college. What's your football or your process like getting ready for football season?
Well, as soon as Brad Powers puts out his first videos, I go ahead and I go ahead and review his videos.
Aggregate.
And his plays and who he likes. And I look to start, you know, getting down because, I mean, I got to be honest, like I don't have the bandwidth to go through all the rosters and everything else. I need others to go ahead and do that. And then I'm like a mutual fund manager. I've got analysts, whether they're working for me, whether they know it or not. And I take their input and then I try to find the best bets or derivative bets that are available, you know, from that to go ahead and wager on.
Nothing NFL yet? NFL draft? You haven't even thought about it, probably?
I think you got to play the Jets under 5.5 and Cleveland under 6.5. I ask you this, Will. Would you be surprised if together, combined, those teams go under 6.5 wins?
I would not be surprised. Those look like some bad teams. And I know Aaron Glenn, I mean, I don't know if he's trying to get fired, but to go on record, I think he said it on camera too, and say, Geno Smith is going to take us to the promised land. I mean, what are you doing, dude?
Well, he knows he's going to be fired, and he knows he'll never get a job anymore. So there's no reason not to. It's like a poker tournament. You got three big blinds left, and you're staring at Jack seven suited, and you're going to shove anyways. You may as well say, I'm going to the promised lands with my Jack seven, because you got to go anyways. So why not, right?
We're only a few weeks away from the NFL draft, which is funny. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of buzz. I guess it's because there's not a lot of quarterbacks, maybe not a lot of skill guys. It feels like there's been less draft conversation, especially around the betting aspect of it. And usually I have bets by now. I don't think I have any draft bets. Do you think this will be something you have a lot of bets on? Would you have any words of wisdom in terms of how to bet the draft? What are some thoughts here in terms of the NFL draft betting?
You know, if there's one theme that teams overreach on quarterbacks every year, and it makes sense. You want to buy a lottery ticket. It could change everything, right? So over under 1.5 quarterbacks, since the first pick's going to be a quarterback, I think it is a beyond a leap of faith to hit the 31-team parlay that the next 31 picks in the draft are going to be non-quarterbacks. So I would look towards over 1.5 quarterbacks at pretty much any price. I think that'll be a winning ticket. Your thoughts on that?
I think that's probably sound advice. But again, I have dove very, very little into the NFL draft. And I've had some good drafts last year. I got some great CLV and just got messed up by that Hunter trade. I got Banks at 14-1 to go sixth, and he closed like -250, and that lost. And I'm a little scarred by that, but I'm sure I'll jump back in as we get a little bit closer. NBA playoffs, any sort of hacks you have for people betting the NBA playoffs, which actually start in a couple weeks here too?
Just the basic strategy of games 1 and 2 go over. And this one makes a lot of sense. I always play game 3 under. And the reason being is when you get the venue change, everyone just saw, look at the Lakers. Like, that's a really high scoring team. And the total oftentimes goes up a point when it really should go down 1.5 points. So solid value. If the first two games of a series go under and you get a venue change, knee jerk it, play under game 3, go contrarian. It's the very rare NBA series that the tax on the total gets too high as you start stacking over after over.
Yeah, game 5 under is when it's 2-2. I usually like to play under 2 just because that game 5 is a proxy for game 7. We know game 7s usually do pretty well to the under 2. All right, Fez, this was fun. Where can we find your picks? Anything else I forgot? Anything else you want to get out there?
Oh, my picks. Well, that's interesting. I'm not selling picks currently anywhere. So you can't, it's like the A-team. You got to know someone who knows someone if you want to get my picks. But you can go at Fezzik Sports, and I'm sure I'll put up some free suggested bets to make, and stay tuned, and we'll see what develops over the course of the year.
No plans yet? Football season, your podcast schedule, any of that stuff that's kind of TBD?
It's all to be determined. But each and every week, my friend Ross Tucker and I do the Even Money podcast. We'll continue to do that. Always lots of fun with Ross.
And you get a chance to counter now. I've had Todd Wishnev on here talk about your tennis game, your inability to beat him, anything you want to get on the record. Will you beat him one day? Is he beatable? You have the floor.
Oh, well, Todd is like 12 feet tall at the net. And for a guy who weighs 400 pounds, he's the most nimble guy I've ever seen. But having said that, last time Todd and I played, we played this format where we hit the ball 3 times and then the point starts to keep the because Todd's serve sucks. I mean, because like we want to keep the stress off of our shoulders. And the scoreboard read Fez 7, Todd 8. And money was pouring in on me. And then I tweaked my bad knee a little bit. And so Todd did pull away, especially with his spinoramas that he hits on his second and third shots, giving him an advantage in every point. So there will be no more of this like bullshit advantage play 1-2-3 format. We'll play real tennis, and as long as I get an A-OK from my medical people and I pass my physical, and Todd may well be in trouble this summer. We'll see.
Fez, you're the best man. Long overdue. I appreciate you making time to come on. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Yeah, at Fezzik Sports on Twitter, or if Will feels I'm worthy, I'll be back on Bet More, Win More, or whatever you call it.
Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Steve Fezzik. We will be back on Monday. We will have a national title game to discuss. See you then.